Okay, so we're reading from the 18th chapter of the 5th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The residents of Jambudvip offer prayers. And today we're starting the prayers of Lakshmi Devi. So we heard a little bit about the residents of this place, which are worshipping Pradyumna. Ilavritavarsa, yeah. And so they are worshipping Pradyumna or Kamadev, and one of the primary worshippers is Lakshmi Devi, because it's her husband. And so for the next little while, we'll be hearing the prayers of Lakshmi Devi. And this prayer, although it's written in prose, is a mantra. And Prabhupada says we should chant it on a regular basis. So we'll chant it today. Om Ram Hrim Hrum Om Namo Bhagavate Rishikeshaya Sarvaguna Vinishaya Vilakshitatmane Akutiman Chitiman Chetasang Visheshanam Charipataye Sadasha Kalaya Chando Mayayana Mayayamrita Mayaya Sarva Mayaya Sahashe Ojase Balaya Kantaya Kamaya Namaste Ubhayatra Bhuyat. Aren't we lucky we have the Hare Krishna mantra? We don't have to chant 16 rounds of this mantra. That would be pretty exciting, wouldn't it? Okay, so the verse. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Hrishikesh. Actually, I just should do the word for word. It's quite long. O Lord. Hram, Hrim, Hrum. The seeds of the mantra chanted for a successful result. O Lord, Nama, respectful obeisances, Bhagavate, unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hrishikeshaya, unto Hrishikesh, the Lord of the senses, Sarvaguna, with all transcendental qualities, Visheshai, with all varieties, Vilakshita, particularly observed, Atmane, unto the soul of all living entities, Akutinam, of all kinds of activity, Chittinam, of all kinds of knowledge, Chetasam, of the functions of the mind, such as determination and mental effort, Visheshanam, of their respective objects, Cha, and Adipataye, unto the master, Sodashakalaya, whose parts are the 16 original ingredients of creation, namely the 5 objects of the senses, the 11 senses, including the mind, Chandamayaya, unto the enjoyer of all ritualistic ceremonies, Anamayaya, who maintains all living entities by supplying the necessities of life, Amritamayaya, who awards eternal life. Sarvamayaya, who is all-pervading. Sahase, the powerful. Ojase, who supplies strength to the senses. Balaya, who supplies strength to the body. Kantaya, the supreme husband or master of all living entities. Kamaya, who supplies all necessities for the devotees. Namaha, respectful obeisances. Te, unto you. Ubhayatra, always, during both day and night, or both in this life and the next. Bhuyat, may there be all good fortune. Now the translation. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Rishikesh, the controller of all my senses and the origin of everything. As the supreme master of all bodily, mental, and intellectual activities, he is the only enjoyer of their results. The five sense objects, the 11 senses, including the mind, are his partial manifestations. He supplies all the necessities of life, which are his energy, and thus non-different from him, and he is the cause of everyone's bodily and mental prowess, which is also non-different from him. Indeed, he is the husband and the provider of necessities for all living entities. The purpose of all the Vedas is to worship him. Therefore, let us all offer him our respectful obeisances. May he always be favorable toward us in this life and the next. Since Prabhupada says we should all chant this, let's chant it responsively. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Rishikesh, the controller of all my senses and the origin of everything. As the supreme master of all bodily, mental, and intellectual activities, all mental and intellectual activities, he is the only enjoyer of their results. The five sense objects and the 11 senses, including the mind, are his partial manifestations. He supplies all the necessities of life, which are his energy, and thus non-different from him. And he is the cause of everyone's, of everyone's bodily and mental prowess, which is also non-different from him. Indeed, he is the husband and provider of necessities for all living entities. The purpose of all the Vedas is to worship him. Therefore, let us all offer him our respectful obeisances. May he always be favorable towards us in this life and the next. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. In this verse, the word maya-maya is further explained in regard to how the Lord expands his mercy in different ways. Parashya shaktaira vividaiva shruyate. The energies of the Supreme Lord are understood in different ways. In this verse, he is described as the original source of everything, even our body, senses, mind, activities, prowess, bodily strength, mental strength, and the determination for securing the necessities of life. Indeed, the Lord's energies can be perceived in everything. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 7:8, Rasoham Apshukonteya, the taste of water is also Krishna. Krishna is the active principle of everything we need for our maintenance. This verse, offering respectful obeisances unto the Lord, was composed by Rama, the goddess of fortune, and is full of spiritual power. Under the guidance of a spiritual master, everyone should chant this mantra and thus become a complete and perfect devotee of the Lord. One may chant this mantra for complete liberation from material bondage, and after liberation, one may continue to chant it while worshiping the Supreme Lord in Vaikuntha Loka. All mantras, of course, are meant for this life and the next life, as Krishna himself confirms in Bhagavad Gita 9:14. Satatam kirtayanto mam yatantas cha dhritavrata namasyas yantas cha mam bhaktya nitya yukta upashite. Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me, the great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. A devotee who both in this life and the next chants the Mahamantra or any mantra is called Nitya Yuktopasaka. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Samaniti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharane Nivashesha Shunivadi Paschachare Satarne Mukam Koroti Vata Alam Pangam Lungaya Tegirim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Shri Guru Dinatananam Om Aganati Mirandasya Ganan Ganashalakaya Chakshur and Milatam Jaina Tatmai Shri Guruve Namaha. So there's a few things in this verse and the verses that follow that are particularly interesting. And Prabhupada points out again this word maya, maya. He pointed it out in the last purport as well. And I did some research on this word. And maya, maya means a form of the Supreme Lord which is made of material elements but is motivated specifically by mercy, by the Lord's compassion for his devotees. And the example that's given is the universal form of the Supreme Lord, which appears in Bhagavad Gita. And it's a material form. It only appears in the material world. It doesn't exist in the spiritual world. But it's there. It is a transcendental form, obviously. All things in the material world in all three levels appear in one place, and the darshan is astonishing, and Arjuna can see kala, time, in that form. And the purpose of the form is to allow Arjuna to be peaceful, even though it's a very unpeaceful form. When Arjuna sees it, he doesn't get peaceful, he gets unpeaceful. And he says, actually, I'd like you to get rid of this form. It's making me nervous. Could you please go backwards and let me see your four-arm form and then your two-arm form, your Samyavapu, because this form is very frightening to me. But nevertheless, he does get the point. And he understands a few things from seeing that point, that form. One thing he understands is that all his enemies are going to get crushed in the teeth of this Virat Rupa, crushed by time. And it's a rather graphic description how their heads are smashed between the teeth of Krishna in this universal form. And at the same time, it shows him that Krishna is the source of everything, that everything is coming from Krishna, and it can all be seen in this form, which is standing before Arjuna. Previously, Krishna was standing there in his two-arm form, and all of a sudden this huge form is now there, And in that form, Arjuna can see the entire material creation. So Krishna is giving him that vision, that mayamaya, so that he can understand and go forward in his service, which in this case is fighting, but in his service with determination, knowing that Krishna is in control, that everything is under Krishna's care. And so knowing that, he can be peaceful. When we understand that Krishna is peace, is in charge of everything, it makes us peaceful. Sometimes we think that we're afraid of the future, but actually we're not afraid of the future. We're afraid of the fact that we can't control the future. The future will happen, whatever it is, but the fact that we have no control over it, we don't know what it is maybe, or even if we do know what it is, we're not in control of it. We have some idea of what we want, but that idea may not come to fruition, and that makes us scared. That lack of control makes us scared. When we're feeling that we're in control of a situation, then we feel very powerful. And so by understanding, by having complete faith, by developing trust that Krishna is in control, we become peaceful. We become ready to relinquish the false position as Purusha. And this is another very important part of this prayer and this understanding of Lakshmi Devi, is that the real Purusha is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I don't know how many of you have been to India. How many of you have been to India? Do you know what it says on the men's bathroom in India? Because it's said in Hindi, so you probably can't read it. But it says Purusha. On every man's bathroom in India, it says Purusha. Doesn't say Prabhu, but it says Purusha. And on the woman's bathroom, it says Mahilya, but that's irrelevant in this case. But the fact that every man is thinking, I'm a Purusha, is a problem. Usually we hear about how beneficial it is to have a man's body. But this is one problem with having a man's body, is the false conception that I am the Purusha. And that Purusha, that false sense of I'm in control, I'm in charge, I'm the provider, I'm the maintainer, is a problem. And it results in repeated birth and death. Maybe in male bodies, but still repeated birth and death. And we're going to see here that Ramadevi, or Lakshmi, as she does in other places as well, in the form of Rukmini, she also speaks about this idea, why should I accept another husband, another material body that has hairs and mustaches and sikas and whatever else? Why should I accept that person as my husband? I should only accept the Supreme Lord, because really he's the only one who's Purusha. He's the only one who's eternal. He's the only one who can provide shelter. He's the only one who's infallible. He's the only one that can be trusted. He's the only one that's beyond birth, death, repeated old age and disease. He's the only one. And then again, when the demigods and the demons churn the ocean of milk, right, Lakshmi Devi comes out of that churning also. And she comes out with a garland, and she wants to find... She wants to find a husband. So she's going around with this garland, trying to find somebody who's a suitable match for her. But she can't find anyone she wants to put this garland on. She goes through them one after the other. She says, well, he's nice, but he's got a bad temper. And he's nice, but he gets old and dies. Hare Krishna. And he's good, but, you know, he's got this problem and he's got that problem. And she keeps going with the garland until she finally finds Narayan himself. And she puts the garland on him. She says he's the only one that's worthy of receiving this garland. So we find that in material world, every Purusha, every man, is looking for Radharani. And every woman is looking for the Supreme Purusha. And they're trying to find, by the process of elimination, no, not her, not her, not her, not him, not him, not him, until they find someone who maybe out of desperation or what, looking at the available resources, they take something that will do for a while. But for a devotee, we realize that it's only temporary. What will do for a while is just temporary. And then it will get old and it will shrivel up and it will kneel over and it ultimately will fall apart. And so Lakshmi is understanding that. In the verses that follow, she's going to get pretty graphic about it. And she's, Prabhupada says, in the next verse, previews of the coming attractions, she says, Prabhupada says in the purport, first line, in this verse, Lakshmi Devi Rama shows compassion towards women who worship the Lord for the benediction of possessing a good husband. So by showing what the compassion she shows is not, you know, okay, Tatashtu, you will get a good husband, he will be rich and famous, he will be tall, he will be handsome, he will be as close to the Purusha as you can get. That's not the compassion she shows. The compassion she shows is that she says, she tells these women, forget about it. This person you're looking for, he doesn't exist. He's only there in the Supreme Personality of God. And if you settle for something else, you're going to find that it falls short. So maybe temporarily you need to have some situation in the material world which gives you some protection. We hear women should always be protected. That doesn't mean protective custody. That means protection, that material needs are supposed to be material needs are supposed to be met. I heard a very nice class Shivaram Maharaj was giving in Mayapur last year, and he was speaking. He said, one does not become a man by being born in a male body. One becomes a man by taking responsibility and by being a responsible, determined, energetic servant of Krishna, and taking his the things that are required of him in this life, taking them and doing them with care and attention. That's what makes someone a man. So if you use that definition, then there's many males, but there's not so many men. There's not so many men. So here Lakshmi is also going to speak. You know, we hear the first part of the verses were Prahlad Maharaj, and he was speaking the stuff we usually hear in the Bhagavatam, don't ever get married, don't get entangled in this thing, it's going to be a pain in the neck, it's going to be a source of trouble, you're going to be sorry. And, you know, we hear that from Rishabhdev, we hear it a lot in the Bhagavatam, but we don't hear so much this part where Lakshmi is going to be speaking basically the same thing to women. Don't think that you're going to find the Purusha, you're not. Unless you link up with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and find shelter in Him, you will always find that the situation is wanting. It's wanting. So if you know that, if you go in with your eyes open, then you can make the best use of a bad bargain. Just like we have this body. And this body is not so great. Some bodies appear to be better than others. But all bodies are bodies, and all bodies offer trouble. All bodies offer trouble. All minds offer trouble, right? Now they may give some trouble, some later a little bit more trouble, sometimes overwhelming trouble, sometimes they appear to be peaceful, but they're subject to change without notice. And the body as well, right? Parikshit Maharaj, he was virile, he was healthy, he was a king, he had everything, he had wealth, he had fame, he had wives, he had a very good parentage, he had power, he had good family, and all of a sudden he was cursed to die in 7 days. The end of him. So it all didn't mean anything. All the exercises, all the training, all the everything. The only training that mattered was that he was trained to seek guidance from sadhus so that he could hear about Krishna at the moment of his death. All the rest of it, useless. Gone in a minute. Boom. 7 days, finished. And nothing can change that. Nothing can change that. So we can try to be healthy. We can eat non-GMO. We can, you know, do exercises and get massages and do all the things that we think are good for us. But factually, we're going to die today or tomorrow. And the knowledge that will be most valuable to us will be the knowledge that we need at the moment of death. That would be to remember Krishna, to seek out the opportunity to remember Krishna. If we have some time, to use that time wisely, to find out the way and the means to go back to Godhead in this life. That's what Maharaj Parikit did. Maharaj Parikit, he knew, oh, I have 7 days. So he didn't have a bucket list. Oh, I think I want to go to Venice. I've never been there. And I want to go see the Eiffel Tower. And, oh, well, I'm still at it. I have 7 days. Let's see, where can I go? I want to go see this place. And I have to go to the donut plant in New York and try every one of their donuts before I kick the bucket. And I have to do so many things. So many people, they call it a bucket list, you know, because when you die, they say you kick the bucket. So before you kick the bucket, you want the bucket to be empty. So you have your bucket list of things that you want to do before you leave the planet. And you scramble, especially in old age, when you're retired, you have some time, hopefully some money. You can run around and check off all the things in your bucket list. You know, I want to check on Sally. She was my girlfriend when I was young. Who knows what's happening with her now? And I want to go visit all the different places that I haven't gone to see. But no matter what's on your bucket list, if you see all those things on your bucket list, if you have any desire at the moment of death, you get another bucket. You get another bucket, and you're going to get to live another life full of things in your bucket list. Again and again and again. And you may fulfill them, some of them. You definitely will not fulfill them all. It's not possible. The desires will come one after the other. So if the number one thing in your bucket list is that I want to go back to Godhead, I want to achieve spiritual perfection, prema bhakti, before I leave this material world, then your life will be successful, and only then will your life be successful. So Parikit Maharaj, when he went before Sukadev Goswami, he said, what is the purpose? What should someone do who's about to die? What should they do? What should they do? And you know, in the material world, you'll hear many things. I know I live in Florida, I was living in Florida for a long time. And when you drive down in Florida towards Orlando and Miami, Hridayananda Maharaj used to call Miami the world's changing body exhibit. Because Miami is where all the old people from New York, up north in the East Coast, they go to Miami because the weather is warm there. There's beaches there. So it's called the Sunshine State. So they go down to Miami to die. You see them. They're very old people. They live in in hotels, and you see them on the roof doing some little exercises. You put your right foot in, you put your left foot in, and whatever, you wiggle it all about. The little things they can do. And they play little games, shuffleboard, something simple, because the body is not working so well anymore. So you have to enjoy a little bit and a little simply. And you go playing golf, but you don't really do much. You drive around in a cart, you know, hit a little ball into a hole. Prabhupada cried when he saw that, actually. He drove by a golf course and he cried. His tears were coming down his face. He said, look at these people. They're in old age. They should be taking advantage of the opportunity to perfect their life and learn about Krishna. And instead, they're hitting a little ball into a hole. How pathetic. And he also said that so many acres of land just being wasted. For what purpose? People are saying there's not enough food. Let them grow food. Why are they growing golf courses? So Prabhupada didn't appreciate so much those things. So the living entity, what should he do at the moment of death? What should he be thinking of? And Prabhupada tells us, right from the first day, when we met Prabhupada for the first day, we were 19 years old, who was thinking of death? None of us were thinking of death. We were thinking we were eternal, for sure. We even thought Prabhupada was eternal, and he was already 69 years old. But we definitely thought that we were eternal. And Prabhupada kept telling us, don't think that this will not happen to you. I'm an old man. I could die at any moment. He said, we do not know which one of us is old. Old is, means how close we are to death. And you may be closer to death than I do, so you may be older than me. We don't know. So Prabhupada would say things like that to us periodically, and they would just kind of, we'd chuckle, laugh, yeah, funny, funny, ha-ha, and go on about our eternal life, right, thinking that we're never going to die. But from the very beginning, if you listen to the classes in 1968, 69, 70, you'll hear the same thing Prabhupada was saying. You're going to die, and the purpose of your life is to develop love of God. Don't be in illusion. So Lakshmi Devi is now, from the female's point of view, going to tell us the same thing. The same thing Prahlad Maharaj told us from a man's point of view. Now Lakshmi is going to tell us from a woman's point of view. Don't think that you're going to find that shelter, that Purusha, in the men's room. You're not going to find Purusha in the men's room. Purusha is only Krishna. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's the all-attractive one. He's in charge of everything. He can take care of everything. He even takes care of my senses. She said, he's the controller of all my senses, the origin of everything, the supreme master of all bodily, mental, and intellectual activities. He's the only enjoyer of their results. So whatever you think you're going to find, whatever happiness you're going to find or you're going to seek, whatever power, whatever energy, it all resides in Krishna. And Krishna is the controller of all those things. He's the Mahapurusha. And he's in charge of your senses even. He supplies all the necessities of life. He's the one who supplies all the necessities of life. Nothing comes without his sanction, nothing. In the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, at the beginning you have that banyan tree analogy. But later on in the chapter, around, I think, from the 12th to the 15th verse, Krishna lists all the things that he is that are essential to our existence. He says he's the light of the sun. Without the sun, nothing grows, nothing prospers. Even people become mentally weak when there's no sun. They start committing suicide in countries where there's no sun for a lot of hours a day. Because without the sun, everything becomes very depressing. And he says he's the moon, the light of the moon. And it's explained that that the moon provides the juice that makes the vegetables healthy and tasty. So all the food that you eat, whatever's tasty, it's all tasty because of Krishna's moonshine. He's the light of the moon. And he adjusts the tides by the power of the moon. So therefore, what's going on here?
He's sleeping while
I'm thinking. Okay. Everybody awake now? Okay, so he's providing the moonshine and he's providing the fire of digestion because we all like to eat. But when you get older, you find out that you can't digest everything. Even though you like to eat it, you can't digest it. And it just causes trouble. It makes you sick instead of healthy. So it tastes good on this end, but it doesn't taste so good on the other end. But Krishna is the fire of digestion. He allows us to relish all these things that we see, that we want to eat, that are, you know, that we like. And he's gives us the veggies the taste, the tides, the fire of digestion. He's the source of all illumination. So whatever illumination you see is coming from Krishna. And ultimately, Krishna says that he's in everyone's heart. Sarvasya chaham riti sannivishto mirtak smirtir gyanam apohanam cha. So not only is he a source of the external things that we need to survive, but he also gives us remembrance. And he also gives us forgetfulness. And he gives us the Vedas, because he's the source of the Vedas. And from the Vedas, what do we get? We get the ability to know him. If we take advantage of that book, those books, that wisdom, we'll get the ability to know him. So Krishna gives us the instructions by which we can know him. He gives us this Bhagavad Gita. He gives us the sadhus and the association of sadhus so that we can take advantage of that and we can become pure devotees in this lifetime and we can achieve spiritual success. So in this verse, we're just hearing the mantra of Lakshmi Devi glorifying her husband, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that she's basically telling everybody else, you should chant this verse, but don't think you can be his husband because I'm already, I mean, he'll be your husband because he's already my husband. So, but you can chant and you can achieve a loving relationship with him. You can please him by this mantra and you will have success. So, and Prabhupada also says we should chant this mantra. We should chant any mantra which glorifies the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because by glorifying him, we get to know him, and by getting to know him, we can develop a loving relationship with him. The more that loving relationship is developed, the more satisfied we become, and the less we need to look for that satisfaction in temporary relationships, which will not be eternal and which will cause us suffering. So I'll stop there. It's already 10 to 9. And if there's any question, yes.
So, a form of Krishna's mercy is that he sends a spiritual master, which is a living being in a material body.
Maya, Maya.
But we perceive him as God. I mean, we worship him as representative of God.
Mm-hmm.
And for all practical purposes, we approach him as God.
Mm-hmm.
And through that, we approach the God himself.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, isn't somehow similar process recommended for women who are simpler in heart to approach God through perfect or through very qualified husband who approaches spiritual master? So I'm a little bit confused. What is Lakshmi Devi recommending to women? because it is. Isn't it too much of a demand addressed, or too much for them? I mean, they should be allowed to have a qualified husband and, I don't know, accept it as equal to God, probably. This is according to their mentality.
It's according to Dharma Shastra. It's a temporary relation. It's a temporary arrangement for existence in the material world, and certainly it's recommended that women and men, you see, 90% of men, we think that men are not going to get there, but they generally get there too, that a relationship is necessary. Men and women come together and they support each other. But the key to success and the key to what you said is that the man needs to be qualified and the spiritual master needs to be qualified and the woman also needs to be qualified. Not that a woman can relinquish her qualification or her effort to go back to spiritual, back to Godhead by just hanging on to, you see what happened with Devahuti. Devahuti served Kapila very, very, not Kapila, Kardama Muni very, very, diligently, so much so that she became skinny and, dirty because he was doing austerities, she was doing austerities. But when she had a child, Kapila Dev, the first thing she asked him was, could you please give me free from fear? That's what I want from you. I want you to sit here and I want you to tell me how I can become free from fear. Give me fearlessness. And fearlessness only comes from being 100% convinced that the Supreme Lord has everything under his control. Anything less than that doesn't really give us fearlessness. It may give us temporary comfort, but it won't give us fearlessness. So Prabhupada, He wanted every man and every woman to stay focused on going back to Godhead. And we make temporary arrangements for our comfort in the material world. Women marry men, men, you know, marry women, and they both take shelter of the devotee. But like Shiva Ram Maharaj was making the point in his lecture that I was talking about, is that he was making a point that a man has a responsibility to become a man, which means he has to be responsible. He has to take the weight of his responsibility in that union on his shoulders. And it's very uncomfortable. It's not that the man gets on a joyride and the woman is just supposed to serve him all the time and he doesn't have any responsibility. He has a lot of responsibility. And that responsibility has to be taken very seriously, otherwise he's not really worthy of that relationship. So it's a two-way thing. Also the spiritual master, he has a big responsibility. When he takes you as his disciple, he's carrying your karma. He's offering you an opportunity. You follow me, I'll take you back to Godhead. That's why he's Shakshad Hari Trinasamasta Sastri. That's why he's worshipped as good as Hari. Because he's the one who's going to take us to Hari. And if he doesn't do that, the consequences are grave. Huh? If he takes you and he doesn't fulfill his obligation to guide you in your way back to Godhead, if he takes you service from you but doesn't do his part, the karmic responsibilities are quite heavy. The karmic reaction is very heavy. Even a leader like a king takes 1/3 of the karma of all his subjects. That's pretty heavy stuff when you think about it, right? And so if he's a nonsense and he doesn't lead you back to Krishna, then he's got some pretty big responsibility there, pretty heavy karmic responsibility. So the ability to take service always comes with responsibility. If you take service and you don't earn it by offering something valuable in return, you're in trouble. So yes, those relationships are there. But Lakshmi is trying to, and Prahlad Maharaj also, is trying to make us aware that it's just not a joyride. That don't think you're going to find your husband and you don't have to do anything. And don't think you're going to find your Radha and you're not going to have to do anything. You're both, men and women, you're responsible. You have to become Krishna conscious in this life. And we see in the Bhagavatam when Draupadi, who had 5 very qualified husbands, right, the Pandavas, they were pure devotees in every sense of the word, friends of Krishna. Krishna stayed with them all the time. And he always was worried and concerned and interacting with them to make sure that their welfare was taken care of. And yet, when they went back to Godhead at the end, when they walked out of their kingdom and they left, each one of them had to come in contact with Krishna individually, even Draupadi. Prabhupada said, at the moment of death, you have to fly your own plane. You can get so much good instruction on the ground, but when you comes to the takeoff, you're flying your own plane. Everybody. So we have to learn to fly our own plane, and different genders learn in different ways. They take different positions. They have different services. But they all have the same responsibility. And that responsibility is to develop unalloyed love for Krishna and go back to Godhead in the end of this life. Hare Krishna. Anybody else? Yes.
At the same time, I cannot ignore my material desires and do something about it.
How can I think about body, leaving the body? Being inspired by the fact that you're going
to
leave the body. Okay, well, one thing that came to mind while you were speaking is that knowing that I'm going to leave the body should make me pretty determined to hurry up with doing what I know is the right thing to do in order to develop control of my mind and senses. It should also give me the determination to associate with persons who are going to assist me in that quest. For instance, you have Dhruva Maharaj. You know, he wanted to get a kingdom, and he went to the forest, and he performed austerities. He wasn't thinking, well, I'm 5 years old. I have a whole life ahead of me. I don't have to do this right now. I'm a kid. I should just go out and play soccer or football. And I'll worry about this kingdom later when I get older. Now I'll just play with my computer and my iPhone. No, he thought, hey, I'm going to go and perform austerities right now. I'm going to go to the forest. And I'm going to get a kingdom that's better than my great-grandfather. And when Narada came to him and said, hey, listen, you know, you shouldn't do this, his answer was, listen, I don't have much time. I want to do this. I'm going to achieve this. If you want to help me, great. And if you don't want to help me, get lost. So he was determined, knowing that the clock was ticking and knowing that, you know, he didn't have much time. He knew he had the instructions, what to do, his mother told him. And so he was going to do it. He was determined to do it. So Prabhupada, he's given us the instructions. Lord Chaitanya has given us a very simple system. And the fact that I know that I'm going to die, and I don't know when, I may live to be 90, 100, God, please not. But it might happen that I live to be over 100, and I might die tomorrow. So I better make the best choice of every minute. Every minute, lava matra sadhu sangha. Every minute, every second, every lava means an 11th of a second that I should take association from somebody who will help me to make a spiritual advancement, because I don't know how many lovers I have left. I don't know how many days. So it should push me. It should inspire me. Have you ever had an experience where you had a deadline? I know for me, deadlines work well, right? You know, Janmashtami's coming, you have to finish an outfit, you have 5 months, and 4 months go by without doing anything on the outfit. But then it comes that you only have 1 month, and maybe you take it out, and you lay it there, and you get a few things together, and you start sewing a little bit. But 1 week before Janmashtami, you're up all night, every night, getting it together, figuring out what you have to do, and you're there, you know, and pushing it. And then 4 seconds before the outfit goes on, the Lord, you're sewing the last thing on, you're putting the last thing on, running it to the altar, putting it on the altar. We're motivated by deadlines. And the fact is that we don't remember that we have this deadline. We forget it. Krishna gives us mrtaksmirtir gyanam apohanam cha, apohanam cha. Krishna gives us forgetfulness. So we think, everything's fine. I remember when I had my stroke and I was in the operating room. I was coming out of surgery and I had this huge thing on my neck and I had wires and beeping things all in my arms and everywhere. And you think, boy, I'm going to really be serious about Krishna consciousness. Death could come at any moment. And, you know, that lasts for about a week. And then you start thinking about what you have to do. You know, I need a new car, and what am I going to cook for lunch, and where am I going tomorrow? And, you know, just, if they call it svasana vairagya. Svasana vairagya means the renunciation of the crematorium. that when you go to the burning ghat, you see the body's burning, and it's such a profound experience that you think, yes, life is temporary. Look at him. He was so nice and healthy, and now he's ashes. I should get serious about spiritual life. But then you walk away from the crematorium, and a few days later, you're like thinking, you know, about the next thing you got to do. That's the nature of material existence. But the devotees, they help us to remember. Krishna, Prabhupada, they help us to remember. And not to become morbid, but to become realistic. That I don't have that much time. And I should use my time wisely. I should use my time wisely. Every minute of my day, I should use time wisely. Prabhupada said we should not waste any time. Not waste any time talking nonsense, not waste any time doing nonsense, not waste any time because we don't know how much time we have. And when Parikshit knew he had 7 days, he said, I have 7 days. I'm not going to waste 1 second of time. He didn't eat and he didn't sleep for 7 days. He just heard. And the sages and Sukadeva Goswami, they also didn't sleep. Or it's not like one said, okay, I'll talk for the first 2 hours, then I'm going to go take rest and eat. Meanwhile, you carry on the conversation. No, they all sat there and they all listened to Sukadeva Goswami speak for 7 days. The glories of the Supreme Lord, without moving, fixed. But unfortunately, we don't know whether we have 7 days or 7 minutes. We have no idea. So we think we have a lot of time. Don't let it fool you. Be serious. So that's how it can enthuse you, not to become lazy. It's like having a gun at your head. When you have a gun at your head, you try to think fast. You don't have time to mess around. Those people who train this martial art thing, they know they have to act fast. When they're in danger, they have to think, okay, what do I do now? And they have to do it immediately, otherwise they're dead. You don't have time to like, well, maybe I should learn this move tomorrow when I come. You may not come back tomorrow. Is that okay? Hare Krishna. Anybody else? Okay, finished. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.